This is the Negative Splits Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Negative Splits Podcast. My name is Glenn, and I'm joined by my boy, Dirty Dutch. What's up, Dutch?
What's going on?
Yeah, not much, man. I heard you're a big fan of the Star Wars movie, from what I hear.
Yeah, I am. The original. Not that shit.
Do you think it's more like nostalgia with you? Like the fact that I know you're someone that, I mean, you host a podcast network, Throwback Reviews. You're a fan of the past. Do you think there would have been anything that could have lived up to your expectations?
Oh, so you, I mean, like, that I don't like the new ones, really?
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, because it's new, you know, like, it's, like, even if it was great stuff, like, maybe your mindset, like, you just, if you were to watch the old ones with the same set of eyes you have now, you might be like, yeah, that's not that good, man.
I think you're saying, like, are you being stubborn for it?
Yes.
But I mean, as a matter of fact, like, when I saw the trailer for, like, the first one that came out from Disney, Force Awakens, 2 years ago, like, I was super psyched because a lot of it looked pretty freaking cool, but I wasn't happy with the story. It just seemed to be, like, the retelling of the original, New Hope, so I was really disappointed with that. And, you know, then the second one came out, Rogue One, which was, like, a standalone film, and I thought that was pretty good because it took just a little bit of something that's mentioned in the original movie and made a whole movie out of it. And it's like the build up right to A New Hope. And I really like that one. And then this last one that came out, I don't know. I kind of was like, well, if it wasn't Star Wars, it would have been a good movie, but I'm just not into this new trilogy, but it does have something to do with the old ones, but not because I'm being like stubborn old man, but there's something to say for like all the puppets and, you know, the stuff, the way they were made. I mean, everything's CGI now. It's just, there was something about, I guess, I think maybe people from like this generation could look back at those that we grew up with and go, man, they're kind of cheesy, like the
right,
know, Jabba yeah. and Yoda. But no, man, that was, I don't know, there was something special about it. But I kind of went into these going, look, we have the originals. Like, that's what I grew up with. If these are good, awesome. And if they suck, well, I've got the originals. So it's not, I didn't go in wanting to not like them. I just don't.
So are you a fan of just cutting it off? Like, some people, like, I like The Walking Dead, and some people say, oh, you should end the show right now because you, basically that it's, you know, what do they call it, jumping the shark or something, the thing with the Happy Days?
Yeah.
So do you think that they should end Star Wars and keep it for what it was, like what you remember, or even, like, bad Star Wars is better than no Star Wars?
I don't think they should cut it off. I mean, just keep going, and if I don't like it, I don't like it. But, I mean, it gives a whole new generation of kids a world that I enjoyed growing up. It was a big influence on me as far as movies and storytelling and imagination. So, go with it. I mean, if you don't like it, then you don't like it. You don't go see it. I will admit, like you mentioned, Throwback Reviews, I was pretty harsh on Force Awakens on my review of that because I was so pumped to love this thing just from some of the clips I had seen in the original like teaser trailer. But then, you know, the story, I was kind of like, man, the shit, because it's the same story. So
right.
that's when I'm like an old man, because it's like, you know, just come up with a new, you can have the universe of Star Wars where, you know, and make it feel like a Star Wars movie without it being a repeat, I guess, in a way. And a lot of people disagree and a lot of people agree, but they think, oh, well, that's how you get new fans to come in by telling a story again. I don't know. It doesn't matter. These new ones, basically, they're not for our generation. They're really not.
No. We're not the target market.
Right.
And did you want... Well, I won't get into the Netflix. There's a Netflix show in regards to like the toys we grew up with when we were younger, which is the first episode is on Star Wars. And I think, you know, the financial money, I think they make more money off of the toys sometimes than they do the actual movie. So getting just out there a movie with new characters, it's important just for, you know, for the toy companies that signed the deal, and for also not Lucasfilm, actually, it's Disney now that controls it. But you might be asking yourself, Glenn, why are you and Sean talking about Star Wars today, right? This is a running podcast. Well, what we're going to do today is we're going to talk to Skylar Hall, who's a good friend of our show. and we're going to talk to him. We're going to get to know Skylar more as a person. We'll talk a little running with him. I mean, we all love running. We're runners. But I think we want to know more about, it's nice to get to know the personality behind the runner or the personality that you see. I think it's neat to know what makes this tick. Now, you know, Sean likes retro stuff. We've gone into it a little, but we're kind of going more into it. I want you to know Sean more as a runner. This will be the first of a series of episodes that we're going to do with different running personalities where we kind of highlight a different aspect of their personality. So here is Skylar Hall. Enjoy.
Hello, this is Skylar.
Man, that sounded professional. What's up, Skylar?
I'm good, man. Just hanging, man. Just hanging. How you doing?
Not bad. I should have did like a bill collector on you on that one. I should have been like, this is Wells Fargo, you know, whatever, credit card. We're calling about your past due account.
See, that's when I hang up or start trying to speak in Japanese and hope that you don't know that language.
Well, Sean might. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no. My company's owned by the Japanese, but I don't know it.
Now, Skylar, we apologize for being kind of late here. We normally have Bill on with us, and he's having all kinds of technical issues with his Skype, so you're stuck with the ugly ones.
Hey, listen, it's 2018. We're going to need you to have a little bit more confidence. Throw that on your New Year's resolutions, and let's get after it, right?
Right on. Now, before we talk to you, I did an intro with Sean, and we're kind of going back and forth on Star Wars, and we explained why we're talking about it. The whole concept of this show is we want to get to know running personalities more for than just running. We're going to talk running with you a little, but we also want to know Skylar, the person. So I think that's what fascinates people. I love the behind-the-scenes stuff and getting to know people. So are you cool with talking about, you know, you as a person, not necessarily as just the guy we know from the YouTube channel?
Yeah, I think we can definitely make that happen.
All right, let's get right to the thing here. Star Wars or Star Trek, what do you like better?
Oh, that's difficult.
You could say neither. If it's neither.
If like push came to shove, I'd probably end up choosing Star Wars. However, I will give credit to the recent Star Trek movies for being captivating. But I will actually throw a curveball and shout out my college roommate who got me into Battlestar Galactica because that was a big thing for him. So if we're going in the general sci-fi area.
Are we talking the original BSG or the revival of it?
I'm pretty sure it was the original. But then again, I was like 18 and very confused and had no idea what the hell was going on. So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to sit on your floor and we're going to rock it. Stargate, also a big one. Both SG-1 and Atlantis. Spent a lot of hours just drinking Kool-Aid and playing Halo and watching that. So I had a weird college experience, I guess, is the crux of this. So Star Trek, Star Wars, I think they get superseded by everything that's currently on the sci-fi network.
I was going to say, what you described sounded like the first time I was ever with a female. I was confused. I didn't know what to do, but I went with it.
Are you sure it was just the first time that you felt that way?
No, I'm still that way with my wife right now. I have to, like, negotiate. You know, like, you got, like, 45 seconds. That's all I need, 45 seconds. That's, like, with, like, 15 minutes of cuddling. Okay.
What I'm hearing is every Valentine's Day and major holiday, you still give out that coupon book.
Yes.
Where it's like, I will do one set of chores, I will go do a grocery run, and then like you get to slide in a little bit of some sexual healing in there. Good job. Way to play it smart.
Let's talk about you and your dating. Now you kind of open, you're a single dude, and do you prefer dating runners or non-runners?
I think mostly non-runners. And this is the thing that comes up on, like, the dating apps. Usually one of the first things that women have historically said to me is it okay if I don't run? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not looking for a running partner. I'll probably just try to run you into the ground. I get super competitive. So, yeah, mostly non-runners. I need somebody to balance me out, somebody to cool the jets for me. Because if we only talked running or we went on runs, I'd be going for a lot of Strava segments, and I would also be very, very alone forever.
I feel like, Sean, it's a good thing your wife doesn't run, because it sounds kind of similar to you.
Have you had you're dating somebody that tries to cool the jets too much, and you're like, wait, whoa, you know, I said not being a runner is okay, but...
I want to believe that my screening protocol is solid enough that I haven't been with somebody who is like extremely sedentary and boring. But I've definitely been in the middle of dates and realized very quickly that somebody was just not going to be up to my energy level
across the board, let alone when dealing with sport. And at that point, you're just like, how fast can I finish this drink? Like, oh, do we order something to eat? Now I have to, like, suffer through this and have to hear about you talk about your dogs for another 25 minutes. Like, yeah, those are the most struggle bus moments when it comes to the dating scene.
What do you think about this, Sean, with the apps and everything? Like, to me, like, hearing a young single dude talking about this, like, we did not have these benefits no. when we were, like, well, first of all, I ended up marrying my high school sweetheart. She wasn't my high school sweetheart. She ended up going to Catholic school. I just, like, stalked her outside of her school and so got lucky. But, like, to me, like, hearing these things, like, man, it's like Facebook, everything, even like that. Like, I didn't have that option. Now I get all these, like, weird, like, freaks that I went to school with back in the day, like, will message you, like, hey, how are you doing? Like, eh, I'm married. Yeah. Like, to me, I think the app thing is definitely a game changer.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I've been married over 20 years now. So, yeah, it was not like that. You just... either someone you work with or just being out or like you, high school sweetheart that you stalked for a few years.
You run around like a superhero. It's sort of the best and worst of all worlds because, you know, if you wanted to make a cold approach, you know, in a public place, a grocery store, a bar, you're walking in completely blind other than just looking at the person being like, I find you vaguely attractive. but with an app, there's some sort of bio, there's multiple photos, and, like, every girl in the Bay Area apparently has been to Machu Picchu, so you're like, great, like, check the box. So you have something to work with. You already have a conversation starter versus trying to just develop this relationship out of complete thin air. But the other side of that is you find out very quickly if people have no text game whatsoever, and it's just, like, just pulling teeth, trying to get through what essentially turns into an interrogation. Just trying to get basic facts out of folks. So, double-edged sword, but it's better than just getting drunk every weekend and hoping that some girl doesn't just look at you and say, I have a boyfriend, as soon as you try to say hi.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever had an experience where, like, it's you do the app, you get the picture, and then when you actually go on a date, you're like, what the heck? This is not the same person, or I kind of been deceived.
Okay, so I've never been outright catfished, right, where it was just like the photo was not of this person at all. But there's definitely been a time or two where you can, when you meet the person, determine that photo might have been 1 to 3 years ago and 20 to 90 pounds earlier. And you're just like, listen, if you were upfront with it, like, it'd have been cool, but now I feel lied to, and that's not the best way to start a relationship. I mean, my underpinning for all romantic relationships, I guess relationships of any type, are they're predicated on communication and trust. And if you violate the first one off the jump, then it's going to be really difficult for us to advance the plot forward.
Would you cut the date right there, like early, like when you first seen the person, like, oh man, this ain't right? Or would you at least, like, kind of grin and bear it and go through with it and hope, you know, hope for the best?
Just hop in and just be like, look at her and be like, nope, just turn around and walk away. That would be cold. I've never done that. I don't think I would. I believe, at least I want to believe about myself, that I enjoy meeting new people. And so even if I know pretty early on that that's not going to go anywhere romantically, like, they may still be an entertaining individual. I might learn something. They might have a more friendship valence to that relationship. So I'll give them a little bit of time of day, but I'm not dropping, like, $75 on drinks to entertain that notion. It's not like that.
Let's say in San Francisco, isn't that like one drink, $75?
Oh, see, that's where you got to make a happy hour move always. Like, happy hour or coffee, you can generally get out in under $20.
Coffee could backfire against you because if you want a date where you really like the person, right, and all you are doing are drinking coffee and it leads to something else, like, I don't know if that, like, you got to hope for at least a breath mint then there.
Because, you got to say you got the coffee breath going.
You don't want the coffee breath. Plus, you're all jittery, and they'll think you're on green. I mean,
you guys have seen me in the videos. You know that I'm already a pretty expressive person, so caffeine has no added effect. But, yeah, that's when you make the bathroom move. That's when you text a friend, be like, yes, I am still safe and have not been stabbed. Then you pop a mint, and you come out. It's a whole protocol. You got to be smart about it.
I was going to ask you, with the caffeine, like, seriously, I was watching one of the episodes that you and Jamil were doing with the mystery drop bag stuff where you're just taking whatever people put in there. How the hell did you not get sick? Like, I'm a nurse in my day job, and I was watching. I go, my God, they're taking white powders. They don't know what they are. So it's like, even if it's just salt and just like caffeine, like how the hell did these guys not get super sick? Like you must have a stomach, an iron stomach.
I don't know if I have an iron stomach anymore. I had a pretty bad food poisoning incident this summer that rid me of all my defenses. Like I literally got sunburned the first time I went outside after I was stuck in my apartment for like 5 days. So there was a time when I had an iron stomach. But that being said, my base diet is mostly caffeine and processed sugar. Today, other than the free croissant that the guy at 7-Eleven gave me for some unknown reason, I'm literally sitting here with Bud Light Platinum. Because, right? Sitting here with Bud Light Platinum and a bag of sour gummy worms, and this is dinner. So, yeah, you gotta like purposefully train for Mountain Outpost, and that's just the life I live.
How old are you, Skyler? If you don't mind me asking.
Oh, I'm 29. I'm so close to that dirty 30, and it's all downhill from there. No, most people are taking bets I'm gonna die by 30, so like I hope you guys really enjoy this last like 2.5 months.
No, I was just asking because like that diet, I'm 43. That diet doesn't fly anymore these days.
I looked in the mirror last week and was like, oh yeah, this is starting to stick to me in a way that it was not 2 years ago. So it's falling apart quickly.
You know, I named you like my, even though it wasn't this year, I named you like my most inspirational moment in our last episode. I said, me and Bill were talking about like things like running feats that impressed you or inspired you. And initially I couldn't think of anything. I was like, eh. And then Bill thought of someone that had cancer and ran, which was like, I felt all stupid. I was like, yeah, that's pretty impressive. But then I thought about it. I was like, Skylar Hall drinking 13 beers was pretty goddamn impressive to me. Like, That to me is my role model right there, because I still can't figure out how you ran a half marathon with 13 beers.
Yeah, I was very confused. I was listening to the podcast as I was on a run, and I was like coming down this descent, and you started mentioning that, and I was laughing so hard that I actually missed a turn and like almost slid out on the trail. So thanks for that. Almost got me injured to start 2018. Yeah, I have this conundrum because I coach the high school kids. But the thing that I'm most known for and, like, the first Google result for me is the beer half marathon. So it's very difficult to be a role model for anyone. yeah, it's a weird thing. But if you draw inspiration from that, then more power to you. You have a life goal ahead of you that I think you're going to achieve in 2018. This is your year. This is your time.
I've been training. I'm training right now. As we talk, I've had 3 beers. So I got 10 more to go. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'll hop on that treadmill, bust out a couple miles. I was thinking of doing like a treadmill beer mile or something just to change the game up. And then I thought about it. I was like, it's too easy to rig, right?
It'd be really easy to rig. The ability to get hurt and fly off the back is very, very high. So if you do it, please videotape it.
I'd go viral. Phenomenal. The show would end up going viral. It would be like the best thing for us.
Absolutely. But I think you would also get very, very bored. Because at least when I did the beer half marathon, there were other people around because I was doing it at Across the Years, which is Aravaipa's 6-day pedestrian race. And so I was able to see other folks and engage with them and laugh and try to stay out of their way, let's put it that way, which gets very difficult when you're drunk, but you do what you got to do. On a treadmill, you're just looking at the same thing, or you're looking at, you know, you're watching The Bachelor on the TV in front of you. Like, that could get monotonous and tiring pretty quick. That might be a much more mental challenge than doing it outdoors.
Yeah, I could see you nodding off doing that, because I remember days of when I used to drink more than I do now, and if I was sitting around watching TV, man, I'm out. So I can only imagine, like, yeah, you're just bouncing around and getting all. I would definitely be falling, but that would be fun to videotape. I think you should do it, G. You should write that big check.
I can't. I'm not going to do a half marathon. Like I said, 13 beers would put me in the hospital. I'm leaving it to Skyler as his record. Broke it, right?
On.
The whiskey guy.
Whiskey man Michael Burstig did break my record. It's okay. It's still within reach. I'm not going to put anything on the table yet, but it may be forthcoming. But there is a middle ground, and this is a video that Jamil and I shot that we had to take down for, we'll say, legal complications. But we did do a beer 10K, and it's a much more reasonable endeavor to do a 10K, and we did it in such a way where you could drink the 6 beers whenever you wanted. You didn't have to do it at the start of every mile, so there was a little bit of strategy that you can employ there. So if you want to meet me in the middle, we can do a beer 10K, and we can get a little weird with it.
You got me in, man. I'm in.
The worst that could happen.
Well, I'd die, but who cares? My wife would probably be happy she could finally date her boss without hiding it.
Jesus Christ.
Whoa, deep cut. Hold on.
Yeah.
Do we need to talk about something here? Or that's the exact thing that will compel you to drink the extra 7 beers. You know what? Yeah, just keep believing that. We can put you over the edge.
Right.
Is there a way we can get a Zwift, that whole, like, app that people use and they, like, ride in large packs online? Can we get that for Beer 10K? Because I think we can get a pretty good contingent of folks who listen to the podcast who will join us in this very, very, very dumb endeavor.
Dude, I think we could do it.
We can make that happen.
We definitely could make this happen.
We definitely make that happen.
Well, we haven't done the treadmill challenge, and we did postpone it due to holidays and family and everything. I mean, it could always be changed. You could change it up this year.
Is it the first contest that's ever been changed due to me being fat?
I don't think
it was. I'm out of shape for December. We got to put it till January. That was like the decision with the treadmill challenge. Like, give me another month to get in shape.
Well, I know, and I just couldn't make it. It was not a good weekend for me at all. I would have had to forfeit.
See, I was trying to take one for the team there.
I got to be top split again.
I think we're on to something. This could be a game changer. 2018, I'm telling you people, we're taking over or we're dying trying. Going full 50 Cent with it.
The negative, yes, I love 50 Cent reference. You got to love it. Sean's looking at me like, what the fuck, what the hell with the 50 Cent stuff? Curtis Jackson, the best rapper ever. No, I'm definitely not going to say that.
Ooh, okay.
He really fell off. I mean, he was...
You are officially too drunk.
No, I don't think he was... I don't even think he was that good, I'll be honest with you. I thought he was very overrated. What do you think?
But End the Club is still a banger.
I like the one where he said something about, like, you used to be the man... It was Wangster. That was the one. Because he dissed the guy that was really popular in high school, and he turned into being a bomb. I was like, that's a good break. But... I think his success had to do with his affiliation with them. I'm going to leave it at that. So I'm going to dig deep here, Skyler. Your biggest fear. What is your biggest fear in life?
Ouch. Probably we're going to go with rejection. Not even failure, because at this point, you get to a point in adulthood where you've just accepted that not everything's going to go according to plan. But everybody sort of likes having a social network and a social safety net. And when that's violated in some way, that's difficult to deal with. So I think that that's still the biggest fear. But there comes a point where you've put enough of yourself on YouTube, you kind of know that there's going to be some negative comments and down, thumbs down or whatnot. So you get used to rejection real quick. Or you just go on like enough dating sprees and you're just like, yeah, this is cool. Get really, really tanked at the club. Approach 20 women, 19 say no, and one says, huh, and you realize she's crazy and you should probably keep moving on. So we're getting over it, but still the biggest fear.
How much do you pay attention to you know, the YouTube comments and the audience?
Not really at all. I think,
I'm sorry, I don't mean that you don't care about what they think, but like the negative feedback or anything like that.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, the amount of support that I've personally gotten and we've gotten on the channel across all the series of videos has been phenomenal. So we definitely appreciate everybody who watches it. When it comes to actually like reading comments and seeing how many views something has and you know, how many likes does it have, I don't really pay attention. I pretty much watch the video once when it gets posted, when I get the notification, because that's usually when I find out that one has been edited and uploaded. And then unless Mike or Jamil flags a specific comment for me to reply to, I normally don't trip off of it. Sometimes I'll go back a couple weeks later and just see if there was like a special shout out that I should respond to. But yeah, really try to put out of sight, out of mind, try to leave as much content for people to latch onto, and just recognize that YouTube is a dangerous and scary place, much like the rest of the world is. And not everybody's going to be a fan of you, and you just keep it moving. When it comes, at the end of the day, I think, it's, especially with the vlogs and the Run Flat, Stay Low stuff, is that's just my day-to-day life. And so you're not entertained by it or don't like it. Like, sucks to suck, but that's just how I operate. That's what I do every day. So whether you like it or not, that's the life that I live, and it's the job that I've chosen, and it's the extracurriculars that I get involved with. And some random person's opinion isn't going to necessarily change that. That's just it's fodder for folks to either get inspired by or take the PSA from and like, nope, I'm never going to do that with my life. And as long as they get value from it in some way, shape, or form, I've done my due diligence. I've done what I can for the community, and keep on living.
Who do you think inspires people to do that though? Like, I'll give you an example. Our show, like, I love looking at feedback, positive, negative, but I don't get what drives the person to leave the real nasty feedback. Like, with iTunes, it's like solving a riddle to leave feedback on iTunes. It's really difficult. We always ask people, like, hey, if you do us a favor, leave feedback. And then when someone leaves a negative thing, it's like, you spent a half an hour trying to figure out how to leave a nasty, like, we had someone leave a thing about swearing. Like, they gave us one star for swearing too much. But I was like, what would drive someone? So I'm curious what drives people to go to YouTube and, like, to insult someone's vlog or something like that.
Honestly, it's probably they get some satisfaction that if they feel like they dragged others down. And so it's when people sort of come from that competitive sort of us versus them mentality, sort of that fixed mindset, they have to drag someone down to move themselves up. Folks can't coexist on the same step of the ladder in their mind. And it's unfortunate, but because it's the way that they were brought up or it's the social circle that they set up for themselves, that's just how they see the world. And, you know, we can rack our brains all day as to what would get somebody to that point where they have to put that sort of negativity into the world and try to drag others down. But, you know, they're living their life. They think that that's their truth. And if that's what they have to do to feel better about themselves, then more power to them. But my personal thought process around it is if I surround myself in my day-to-day with folks who have that more growth mindset, that are trying to add value around them to their relationships, to the work that they do, to whatever content and creation they might be putting into the world, then that's going to suit me a lot better, and it's just going to be a much better add to the social fabric as a whole. And so, like, everybody who's a content creator, be it, you know, Mountain Outpost and all what we're doing on YouTube, what you guys are doing with the podcast, like, we're adding value and folks are enjoying that, and the haters are going to hate. And if they can't see good in the world coexisting with what they're putting out there, then it's a shame, but we're going to keep doing what we do, and the folks are going to keep liking it and listening and subscribing and letting us know when we're messing up, but ultimately getting something out of it.
To go on hate, and I might lose a subscriber or two by saying this, Donald Trump's tweets, do they scare you at this point? Like, I just read one tonight, and I go, my God. I probably shouldn't bring this up on the show, but when I read it, it was about the nuclear button. I don't know if you guys read that thing with he's like, yeah, that guy's got a nuclear button. I got one that's bigger and it's more effective. Like, he scares the crap out of me with this stuff. Like, and I'm not going to say my affiliation one way or the other. You probably can read which way I go, but, like, my God, we're going to end up blowing up. And you know what, Skylar, I'm worried for you because they said that their missiles can hit San Francisco.
I mean, I've been worried about this sort of situation since The Rock came out in 2005, or no, 1995.
Yes.
So
Sean Connery.
So I kind of pretty much have always assumed, exactly. I've pretty much been prepared for an attack in San Francisco since I was in elementary school. But when it comes to the tweets, I'm more concerned with the way that we use language, especially with youth. And I think part of this comes to the forefront because I'm a coach now and I'm interacting with high schoolers on a regular basis. But, you know, I'm always concerned about how we frame interactions and how we deal with conflict. And, you know, going back to the issue of dating, like, we've all been in those relationships where you realize very quickly that, you know, you have a lot in compatible with someone, but then as soon as the first conflict arises, you realize that your communication structures for that are completely different and off base. That's what I'm concerned about in the long run for the example we're setting.
Right.
I think that's my biggest takeaway. Is I'm trying to figure out, you know, how do we get to the solution space of making sure that folks aren't using anything on Twitter or social media in terms of flaming and negative comments as their schema for dealing with conflict. How do we constructively deal with problems and have a conversation and find a middle ground, or at least agree to disagree and have a civilized conversation? And that's what I try to put out there. And whether folks get that message or want to heed that, I don't know. But it's little bits that I think that we can continue to do.
I agree 100%. I think a lot of the they're not even that veiled, really, to be honest with you. I think they're pretty clear some of the message where they're targeted to. Now, you mentioned coaching the youth and everything like that. This is going to be a kind of a tougher question. Have you ever coached someone where you realized, like, they weren't going to live up to their potential, maybe athletically or, you know, even more? Like, did you ever have a relationship with one of your students or where you were frustrated, where, like, I'm not going to get through this person, you know, they're not going to reach their potential?
Absolutely. Part of it's a maturity thing. Because I do interact specifically with high schoolers, I remember high school and I remember it being a difficult time. So I try to be cognizant of all of the additional social stresses and the academic side of it. But there are definitely some athletes I've had where I've just sort of looked at them and said, if you just listen to me and give me a chance to follow this advice, whether you recognize it in the next 2 or 3 months during the season or you recognize it 3 to 10 years from now, this is going to bode well for you. And, you know, again, not everybody has the same communication style, and you have to sort of adapt and try to reach those kids in whatever way that they can, that they can hear you and sort of put that nugget in their brain to retain for later. But you sort of have to say it as many ways as you can and reinforce it and try to build their confidence while giving them constructive feedback. And yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. And it's probably the most taxing thing you can do as a coach, is just try to figure out how to get through to these folks and recognize that they can be so much more, that their goals can be so much higher than they have set them to be. Or, you know, especially because my alma mater is not notorious and well known for its academic standards, saying you can make it out and, you know, not necessarily have to go straight to the community college or, you know, take a non-traditional route, but like you can achieve academic success and go to a 4-year and get a scholarship. There have been times where folks just haven't realized that that's an option, and it's a struggle, but you have to just recognize that it's a long game and you might not see the success for that athlete as you're having that conversation, but you just hope that at some point something clicks for them or another teacher or another coach says something where it all comes together and they have that aha moment.
As far as I'm assuming that, you know, your students know about your YouTube activities, and I'm assuming other teachers. How do you balance that with your athletes, to keep them more on a serious note? I'm assuming you can be cool with them, but I'd also assume that sometimes you have to be a little bit like, all right, that's not me right now. Let's be serious. Is it difficult to juggle that sometimes, and with other teachers?
I don't get it as much from the administration or other teachers. I think that the teachers who do know are sort of like, yeah, this makes sense. Like, you're an idiot, and we knew that, because most of the teachers are teachers that I had when I myself was in high school. So they still have pictures of me with a bang and fro and braces, like, up in their classroom. So that's usually the bigger thing I got to deal with. But in terms of the kid, I have a pretty laid-back nature as a coach anyway. Like, I'll crack jokes even at their expense. There was one of the vlogs recently, I think it was from our league championship meet, where, like, in the vlog, you hear me actually say, like, oh, I hate you all. I can't wait to be done with this season. And it's said in a completely joking manner, but that's just the vibe I have with my kids.
Yeah.
So that all colors our interaction as a team. But when it comes down to business, I have the fortune of having run in the program at that high school, having run in college, having had, you know, some semblance of consistency and success in my post-collegiate career, and so that sort of bolsters against any of the stupid things I do on camera, because they can say, oh, he's an idiot, but he's also achieved X, and he's still running a decade after he started, and so maybe we should listen to him. He kind of knows what he's talking about.
Now, do you have a biggest...
So will I give them crap during... Oh. I was going to say, but I'll hop in with intervals and, like, run them into the ground. If they start talking crap, I'm like, oh, we're doing 1200s today, and I'm running them with you, and I'm going to beat you, and it's going to hurt, and you might throw up. So I'll put my money where my mouth is, for sure.
Nice. Do you have a biggest regret, something you wish you could do again or change?
Interesting. I don't think I regret a lot I really don't think I regret much of anything, mostly because I try to always focus on the learning and the takeaway from anything that's been either a failure or a general mess up on my account, where I can say, like, oh, I really botched that. Here's how I do better next time. There are moments that I wish I might have capitalized on more, and that's mostly non-athletic, because I am not nearly as successful of an athlete to get wrapped up into my success in that endeavor. But I think that a lot of it comes down to, you know, I wish I would have made it to somebody's wedding, or I would have taken an opportunity to just, like, take days off of work and go on a trip and do something dumb with friends, or, you know, be there for somebody's baby shower, or, you know, the first holiday after they had a kid, those sorts of things. Gotten on an earlier flight to make it to Texas before my dad passed. Like, things like that, you're like, ah, I wish it could have happened, but then you just sort of embrace it for what it is and say, like, this is now a part of my experience. And you can say what if, but at the end of the day, I am the person I am because of all of the combined experiences that I've had and all of the combined interactions that I've had with individuals and groups and communities. And so for that, because I'm comfortable with the person I am, I can't really say that I have any large regrets.
Man, nice answer. That was a good answer. Sean, you got any regrets?
Yep. Got lots of regrets, man. But you got to live in the now. Just learn from them.
You know, the only regret I can say, I'll put it out here in public, is I had a friend that passed away, and I remember I didn't talk to him 4 or 5 months prior, and I always was thinking, like, man, I should have made the time. I should have made the time. You know what I mean? Like, that was my one life regret. I wish I would just, you know, took 2 minutes out of my day to hit that phone number. What's up, man? That's all it would have took, you know, like. So that would be my bigger, just, you know, there's no excuse not to make 2 minutes to reach out to somebody.
Yeah, and it's so easy now with text and Facebook, and we have so many mediums to do it, but we all get caught up in the daily minutiae of our lives, and we let things slip to the back burner. And, you know, you just got out of the holidays, and there's so many people. I was literally going through my phone book today and looking at it, I was like, oh, I totally just, like, didn't send them a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a Happy New Year that I should have. And so... it's so easy to communicate with people, yet it's so, so difficult. I feel you there.
Now, I was watching one of your videos, Holiday Mile. Did that suck or what? Like, how did that go, man? Oh, my God. Like, I was thinking, how did... I don't know, like, how you do that going into knowing that, like, you basically know you're going to throw up. It's like, to me, that would wreck my whole day. Like, what these guys consumed in that one. Like, can you explain the setup for it and what happened?
Yeah, so this was actually partially the fault of our Patreon supporters, so thank you, you horrible, horrible people. But also, there's a kid named Mitchell who threw down a challenge for the Cliff Bar Mile on Twitter. And he's down at UC Santa Barbara, and him and a couple friends, like, filmed themselves doing 4 Cliff Bars, no water, any drink, and ran a full mile. So he shot us out. And I was like, this is absurd, but I will gladly do this because this is right up our alley. But we had to put a holiday twist on it. And so we combined all the suggestions we'd gotten. So that's why we ended up with the Cliff Bars and the eggnog and then the Christmas tree fraps, because people, for whatever reason, loved the unicorn frappuccino challenge, which is got to be up there with the worst moments I've ever had in my life. So the premise, for anybody who hasn't seen the video, is 4 laps, because that's how many laps you run on a track for a mile. The first 3 was a Cliff Bar and a glass of eggnog. And then the last of the laps was 4 cookie cream. They were like Oreos, but it was like a candy cane cream filling. And the Christmas tree frappuccino from Starbucks. So just a sugar bomb to just get you over the finish line. And it was horrible. It was dark. Jamil and I, as we were going to the store, we're literally walking through and picking up these items like, this is a dumb idea. Like, this has got to be up there with the challenge. Like, there's most of the time we're over-optimistic about challenges. We're like, oh, it can't be that bad. Like, that's kind of why the theme is, like, what's the worst that can happen? That was one, the Holiday Mile was one where we were actually buying things like, this is going to go poorly. Like, this is almost a guarantee that this is going to go poorly. And yeah, so So we were out there, and it was kind of fine for the first couple. We were smart and diversified the flavors of our Clif bars, so at least we had a nice change of palate. But it's so much damn sugar, and we were racing daylight, so we, you know, from a quality of the video standpoint, let alone trying to get our bodies to function, we were trying to get the hell out of there. It was rough. My camera froze. I normally run with a GoPro, but even my camera was like, absolutely not. This is dumb. I refuse to assist you in this. And it froze and lost the file. That's why there's no individual shot of me running, because my camera just crapped out, much like my body did. So, it was bad. There were some times where it was just like, this is going to be a mud butt situation. But there was also an active track workout for these kids. Like, they're like, you see the people running behind us doing their track workout. I'm like, I can't just like throw up a crap on the track. Like, there are people here. Like, this is, you know, for my like mental well-being, I had to hold it together. It was ugly. And then when we got off the track, this isn't in the video, but Jamil and I just sat in the truck for like 15 minutes in complete silence, trying to figure out what we were doing with our lives and like regroup before we were able to drive back to the Aerobipa headquarters and film the outro. It was brutal. Yeah. And then I had a wedding the next day, and my body was still jacked up. I was trying to DJ, and my gut was just like, man, don't even try to eat whatever the wedding is trying to offer you right now. Like, just stay away from the open bar for as long as possible, because we're not sure how we're going to react.
The electric brutal. Slide.
Don't try that at home.
I was going to ask you about the electric slide, because you're a DJ. When the hell did everyone learn this thing, man? Like, I feel like there was this class to the world. They're like, here's the electric slide. Because I go to a wedding, everyone knows the friggin' thing, and I'm like, I really don't know it. Like, and I'm like, you awkwardly try to go along with it. What are your thoughts on the electric slide?
Okay, so we're going to need to broaden this question out a bit, because we might be having a generational thing I want to point out. There's an age group where the electric slide is the jam.
Right.
Then there's a younger age bracket where the cha-cha slide is everything. Like, cha-cha slide is the world. Exactly.
Yeah.
Then there's an even younger bracket where the wobble.
Oh no.
Just you get down with the get down. Okay. See, now we're pulling it out. Then there's like a subset where the Cupid shuffle is like
that.
The line dance of choice, and it's mostly people from the South. Okay. So you end up in a wedding situation where all of these line dances have to get thrown out because you have to placate to all of these age groups. Now, there's never a class. You have to basically look for the person you think has the best rhythm and understanding of instruction and just follow them. And because these come up at every wedding, every like routine dance performance, a prom, or, you know, you should not be hanging out at a prom. None of us should be hanging out at a prom. So let me just erase that example. You see it at a wedding. You see it at, like, I don't know, some like country bar where they also have to play like one non-country song an hour. Like, that's when it comes out. And he's got to learn through experience. Most people for the cha-cha slide still have no idea what Charlie Browning is. But I was definitely at a wedding. We were just talking about this. My friend, he lives in Ohio now, but he's a high school friend of mine. At his wedding, the cha-cha slide came on, and basically the entire room stopped and looked at me. I was not the DJ. I was just a guest. And everybody looked at me like, will you please teach us? And there was a moment where I was like, is this racist? But then there was also a moment where I was like, no, I'm the only person here who's demonstrated rhythm. And so you guys need me to get you through this moment. Like, I am guiding you through the darkness. And so I was like, I got them through the instructions. Everybody learned how to Charlie Brown that day. You know, everybody won. And then and then I did my community service for the year. So, yeah. But as a DJ, going full circle, line dances are the worst. Because there's no creativity mixing into or out of a line dance. You're not creating an arc of energy. You're not creating this like narrative of the experience. You're just like, all right, cool. Like, here's some words that you can follow for the next 4 minutes. So good luck with that while I grab my drink, because that's the only way I can deal with you guys being super drunk and making very, very, very shitty requests.
Skyler, Jamil with a beard or no beard? What do you think? What's your preference?
Okay.
Listen, if you and Jamil decided, like, you know what, we want benefits, we're going to be together, do you like him with his beard or no beard?
I forgot he had a beard for the longest time, and I went back and watched Drop Bag Challenge for some reason a couple months ago and was like, holy crap, when I first met Jamil, the entire time I knew him, he had facial hair. And in my head, I don't picture him with facial hair anymore. So I would personally opt for no facial hair. I think it's cleaner. I think he looks more rugged and professional, which is good for the brand, good for Air Viper. And it might be more aerodynamic because the way that that wispy hair flows off the top of his head, like, it's perfect for running, but that beard was pretty thick. So I don't know if I can get behind that, especially if he's doing Barclays, getting all the random crap from the brush in it. Like, yeah, that's just not functional. So
I prefer beard.
You're free, Jamil.
Jamil, I like your beard.
See, that's my, man, it's my baby face bias, you know, because I can't grow a beard. I think I'm just like, no beards for anybody.
John, you're a weird dude because you could grow like a huge beard and you refuse to grow it, right?
It's a pain in the ass, no. Man. It's a pain in the ass. I used to have a big beard, but one, you get to a point you have to get by where you want to rip your fucking face off. Like, that's how I get. So you have to get through that spot. Plus, my wife doesn't like it, so.
Well, that's
the. She don't like it. I ain't growing one. You know what I mean?
That's the deal. Yeah, you got
it. Okay, here's the question. Did she not like it because of the texture or because of how it looked?
Both.
Okay.
Because my kids have seen pictures and they're like, "Dad, you got to grow a beard. You look cool." And she's like, "Yeah, no, not happening." So I listen.
So I don't want to condone you growing a beard. However, I would be interested if you were to do so again and added some beard oil. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and so a lot of the ads are for like razor companies and like beard oil. I feel like if you went that route, you might be able to find a middle ground that appeases your children, but also your wife is like, "Well, this isn't the worst thing that's happened in our marriage," and then you'll be good to go.
Yeah, dude, I don't put product in my hair. I'm not going to put it in my beard, so it could happen.
I was watching Hitch last night. I'm trying to be helpful. I'm sorry.
Maybe squirrel's nut butter. I could grease it up with some squirrel's nut butter.
Oh. You know, the biggest regret I had was with we had Chris Thornley on, a beer with Sleepy G, and then I seen a post of his where he said he's like, I don't know, like 10,000 days sober, and I was like that probably wasn't the smartest business decision we ever made.
No, man, he had a good time on there. He was funny. We got him laughing.
I know, I love him, but I was thinking like that probably wasn't the spot to put him in, right? Like an episode where we're drinking heavy and highlighting him.
Well, it's not like you had him in Sleepy G's dungeon and,
pouring beer in his face. Maybe tomorrow we'll try that.
Thornley's the man. He plays everything like a champ. And I've seen him in person around drunk people. I'm pretty sure via Skype he's perfectly okay.
Skyler, we've taken up, I don't know, I told you 25 minutes. We're taking up all your time. The Splits love you, man. You're like our guy. You're like the fourth Split. An honorary Split, we're naming you. We appreciate everything you do. I hope our listeners get to know or they learn a little more about you as a person here. And we appreciate everything you do. And keep doing everything, keep inspiring and motivating us.
Nah, thank you guys for having me. You guys get me through many a run and commute to work. So keep doing what you're doing. And definitely looking forward to catching up sometime soon. And I'll be rooting for your Bills this week. So,
yes, go Bills. Sean hates football, so he ain't going to talk about it.
Oh, boy.
Me and Billy Yang are going like back and forth with each other on Twitter about stuff. He's a Bengals fan. He's pissed off that they're keeping our Bills.
Thanks for listening to the Negative Splits podcast. If you'd like to help the show, head over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating or review. If you'd like to contact the show, send us an email at negativesplitspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. We're the Negative Splits. And if you're on Strava, why not step up to the challenge and join the Negative Splits Podcast Club?